Now, this is Mornings with Greg Carey.
Getting a lot of calls on the Adam Goods situation and the police chase situation and all kinds of other things. We'll get back into your calls in a little bit. Lee Matthews in after 11. I'm sure Lee will have a thought about all of that. 13 13 32. On Friday, you might remember, I had a lengthy chat with our foreign affairs analyst, Dr. Keith Suter, about the tragic events in London, that horrible and very public murder. I made the point to Keith that I was surprised that the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, had gone out of his way to say that Islam was not the problem, when clearly a section of that faith is a very big problem indeed. Here's a little of what the British PM said.
Attack on Britain and on the British way of life, it was also a betrayal of Islam and of the Muslim communities who give so much to our country. There is nothing in Islam that justifies this truly dreadful act.
You see, that's one of the real quandaries for the world now. Is there anything in Islam that does justify it? And if there's not, then where is this radical group coming from, this so-called Islamist group coming from? A minority, but obviously a very deadly minority. Prior to the horrible murder in London, I had organised to talk with our next guest, who wrote what I thought was a very thought-provoking article after the Boston murders. Equally vicious. Daniel Pipes is the president of the Middle East Forum from the United States, and his article explored the history of Islam and the very real issues he believes it, and I would think many of our politicians, need to confront. Daniel, much appreciate your time. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
Maybe just on that point about our political leaders for a start, why are they so reluctant to confront the fact that there is a real issue with some elements who follow the Islamic faith?
The temptation is to say that they're weak, they're cowardly, they're euphemistic, they're politically correct, and so forth. And no doubt all those elements play a role. But I've given this a lot of thought, as you suggested, and I've come up with two reasons I think are more important. The first is the sense that were one to name Islam, as David Cameron just did not do, then other Muslims would become agitated and hostile. So they believe that by not naming names, by saying this is anti-Islamic rather than Islamic, they are soothing Muslims and not having more trouble. Second reason is even more important, which is the sense that if you do name Islam, if you do say this has something to do with Islam, this is something specific to Muslims, then it's incumbent upon you as prime minister, or whatever you might be, to follow through and look more specifically at Muslims. It takes something we all know about, like airplane security.
Yeah.
It would mean, instead of looking at everyone equally, it would mean looking more exactly at Muslims. And everyone's loath to do that. And therefore, they go through these exercises, which I'm sure David Cameron realizes nonsense, of saying that this has nothing to do with Islam. By the way, David Cameron, before he became prime minister, gave a superb speech about the dangers of radical Islam, all of which he seems to have forgotten, or would rather not remember, since he became prime minister.
Yeah, they're very interesting points you make, and I understand them. How then do you confront it, Daniel? Maybe it might be best if you give us a little background about the vast majority of Muslims who follow their faith peacefully and just try to live their lives peacefully like everybody else, and this radical group.
I don't think the key distinction is between peaceful and violent. I think the key distinction is between those who are trying to accept modernity or working in a modern way to live a modern life, especially living in Western countries, and those, what am I calling New Zealand a Western country? And those who are intent on recreating a medieval law code and trying to live the way the Muhammad did. That's the key difference. And some of the latter engage in violence, and plenty do not. But to my mind, those who don't use violence, who work through the system, educational, legal, media, political, and so forth, are potentially more dangerous than those who use violence, because they are more capable of reaching high positions. Violence can only get you so far. Violence is, I think, a dead end. But working through the system, as we can see in the UK in particular, gets you a long way.
Yeah, but, you know, they don't want to work through the system. They want to destroy the system. Or is that too simplistic?
Well, what do you mean by destroy the system? They'd like to inherit what we've built.
Well,
you like looking at the Soviets. The Soviets didn't want to raise everything to the ground. They wanted to inherit.
Interesting.
Our factories, our buildings and so forth. And likewise, the Islamists, they want to inherit it.
Do you think so?
I'm very convinced, though. Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone. It's in anyone's interest to destroy. Yes, you in the course of warfare, you might destroy some buildings and some people, but overall, you want to gain this. There are whole books about how Muslims can take over the United States. They want to take it over. They don't want to end it. This is a powerful country. They would be very happy to have control of it.
But again, it might be a simplistic reading of what's going on. Excuse me, but when you listen to the diatribes of Islamists, you get the feeling that they so hate Western values that they might want to inherit, as you're suggesting, the United States or Australia or other Western societies, only to destroy them and then rebuild them in their own image.
Well, I think we're more or less saying the same thing. They would like, let's look at the UK, which is the most advanced country in the West in terms of Islamic encroachments. One sees the Islamists are gaining power here and there. There's some enclaves. There are all sorts of customs which have changed. And if they get their way, schools, hospitals, the political process, food, you name it, will change bit by bit until it becomes Islamic. And then one fine day, 50 years, 100 years from now, you turn around and you say, this isn't too different from Saudi Arabia. But the buildings will still be there. People will still look roughly as they do today. They just will be wearing different things, and they'll be eating different things, and they'll be having different customs. So they want to inherit it. They don't want to destroy it.
So what then, and I suppose you can ask the question on several levels, what do you do to confront that possibility, or some say inevitability? One, if you're a Muslim, just practicing the faith as you understand it, not as the Islamists do, and one is the wider community around the world who needs to confront the Islamists.
Well, the striking thing is that attacks such as those in Boston, London, and perhaps the one that took place in France even more recently, we don't know the identity yet of the attacker, but it looks like it was North African. These attacks have a major impact on public opinion. They teach people about the dangers in a way that building enclaves and changing the food in schools and so forth don't do. So I think from the Islamist point of view, these kind of attacks are in fact counterproductive. Yes, they scare people, intimidate, but I think more people are disgusted and determined not to fall prey to this kind of arrogance and bellicosity. So I think it's very counterproductive. If I were advising them, I'd say, stay clear of this kind of nonsense, this kind of violence. It only hurts. On the other side, as I'm not their advisor, and rather not sympathetic, obviously, I don't want anyone harmed, but once it happens, there is political benefit. People do learn from it. I call it education by murder. And we've seen a lot of it over the last 15 years. The most dramatic example, of course, was 9/11, where the whole United States was paralyzed for a bit more than a day. And that really had an impact, and not just the United States, but especially the United States. None of these other episodes, not the Bali episode against the Australians, not the Beslan against Russians, the 7/7 against the London, the transportation system, the Madrid one, none of them have had quite the same galvanizing effect. But rather rapidly, Westerners are learning about Islam and about Islamism and are becoming aware of it.
But you talked about education a moment, though. Who is that aimed at? This against the backdrop of a debate even within those who follow the Islamic faith about how they confront that minority within their group who threaten, I suppose, the image of the majority, which would be very sad.
I would say there's a civil war in the Muslim community between those who want to revert back to a medieval way, saying this is the... We were strong in the medieval time. We Muslims were strong back then. we will be strong again by following the same precepts we did then, which is essentially the Sharia, Islamic law. And then those Muslims will say, no, that is wrong. You know, the West has achieved something, and we must learn from it. Ataturk would be the great example of the latter, the Turkish leader in the 20s and 30s. He said, we have to learn from the West. Well, that's the great debate. That's the fight. That's the civil war. And we're watching it. And we who are not Muslims, I think, should always oppose the Islamists and always help those who are trying to fight the Islamists.
Doesn't
whom there are a real, you know, they're real body people.
Yeah. Doesn't that then require, and when I was talking to Dr. Keith Suter, our foreign affairs analyst on Friday, he said I was being naive for putting the point I'm going to put to you now. If we're to do what you just suggested, doesn't it require real leadership from our politicians? And I would say at the top of that requirement is truth from our leadership. Is that naive or is that true?
No, it's true. And there are indeed politicians, including David Cameron himself. I can send you after we finish talking the excerpt from the speech from some years ago. It was a wonderful speech. It was a Churchillian speech. Yeah, they can do it. They just, for reasons I tried to explain to you earlier, they don't choose to do it most of the time.
That's interesting, Daniel. It's lovely to talk to you. If you'd like to read more of Daniel Pipes' work, go to danielpipes.org, and I hope we can talk again. Daniel, all the best.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
All the very best. Interesting. 18 past 10 it is, and Greg Carey until 11:30. Our number until then is 131332.